What about now?
Yeah.
All right. I've actually stashed away water up here, so let me grab that. If you guys will stand again for the reading of God's Word, my text is going to be out of Hebrews 13, 1 through 16. Sorry, 1 through 6. That's funny. And before I read the text, I just want to say what a privilege it is to be here with you guys in this way. I want you to know that the elders have and you guys have dreamed very well for us, the interns and the guys going through. And we want you to know that we are also dreaming well for the people, hopefully, that we're going to be impacting because of your graciousness in letting us preach and because of the skills that you're letting us kind of hone. And it's just really incredible what you guys do. So I, on behalf of the interns, past, present, and future, just say thank you. So chapter 13, verse 1. Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous. Keep your life free from money, from the love of money, and be content with what you have, for He has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Let's pray. Father, I pray for tonight that we would understand what it is to love each other better through the word spoken, and that we would catch a vision and a dream for what it would look like to be even more hospitable than we already are to strangers and each other, and that you would equip us by your power to do so, because you are a God who will never leave us nor forsake us. Amen. You guys can be seated. In ancient Greece, there was an evil man named Damastes, who legend has it was the son of the ocean god Poseidon, and he lived on a highway called the Sacred Road. And people would come from temple to temple as they're going around worshiping their gods. And he had a stronghold in the hills, and it would sit right on this road called the Sacred Road. And he was an evil man, but you wouldn't know it kind of right off the bat, because he would invite people into his home, and he would show great hospitality to them. He would give them fine meals, play music for them, have great conversation. And then at the very end of the evening, when the travelers were resting and in full confidence with Damastes, he would then take them up to their chambers, where he had a bed made of iron. And this bed was always either too short or too long, depending on the traveler. And it was made of iron. It was hard. And when the traveler would say, Damastes, do you have somewhere else I can stay? Because this bed is made of iron. This is really hard. And it's always long. It's always too short. Is there anything you could do? And then Damastes, being the evil man that he was, would then take them, bind them to this bed with shackles, and then begin to stretch them on a rack and break bones and pull ligaments. Or if they were too long, he would shorten them so that they would meet his expectations. Very gruesome story. And luckily, in the story, Theseus, the great adventurer, the great hero, comes in. He saves the day. He outwits Damastes. And then he ensures safety for the travelers on the Sacred Road. And this is in story after story after story in ancient literature. And it's even in stories in the Bible. You have characters who show or don't show hospitality. And it's supposed to give you this sense where either they're good or they're bad, or they're trustworthy or not trustworthy. And it's something within the ancient world that happened all the time. In Greek culture, Zeus, the main god, was the patron god of hospitality and lightning. But it was also hospitality. It was something integral to every ancient society. And I don't think we in this world of our white picket fences and our own homes and our own cars and our own jobs and our own little microcosms of a world really understand what hospitality is like, or really understand the value of it, the importance of it. In ancient times, traveling from one area to another was incredibly dangerous. There were limited roads, no hotels, no cars, no planes, no trains to get anywhere safely. Ethnic barriers were more severe. Political tensions were more severe. Going from one area to another area meant you were going into an area that you couldn't MapQuest. You couldn't Wikipedia and find out what is this area about. You had to just go and hope for the best. If any travel was ever going to happen in these cities, every society had to come up with their own code of conduct for hospitality. And you see this a lot of times. We see this in biblical stories when travelers would come into a city and immediately go to the town center, the town square, a major well of the area, and they would like hang out there and they would just kind of sit and wait and hopefully someone would take them in. And if you remember some of the biblical stories, every single time someone is not taken in, either violence occurs or it's at the very least a very negative thing, right? There's no room for Jesus in the inn, right? Or stories in Judges where people would show up and no one would take them in and then violence would happen. It even happened in Genesis. Hospitality was huge for the ancient world. It was absolutely integral to their society. But it was an even bigger deal to the people of God. Because hospitality wasn't just something that we did, right, for our benefit. It was something that was revealing God's character to the Israelites, and then the Israelites' character to God and everyone else. So it was something that was very revealing of the Lord. That's what hospitality was. It wasn't just something we did, or they did, because I wasn't there. Many ancient cultures valued hospitality for the sake of expediency. So if let's think of it like this. If I'm in Jackson and I'm traveling to Nashville and I'm like, hey guys, let's go over to Nashville. So we go to Nashville, we hang out by this well or something, and we wait for to be taken in. Someone takes us in, everything's great. And then we go back to Jackson here and we say, oh man, people from Nashville, they're incredible. They're so great. They'll take you in. You guys should go over there and hang out. And so then people from Jackson would go over there, more people. And then people from Nashville would start coming on. Oh, you're from Nashville. Yes. And all of a sudden trade would increase. Literacy would increase. Economic greatness would increase. Religion, all this kind of stuff. Really, really expedient. Really, really good. That's not the case in the Bible. In Deuteronomy 10, 17 through 19, the Lord tells us to do something. And then he gives us a reason why. And it's completely different than it'll bring you trade. It'll bring you a lot of benefit. It says, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords. The great, the mighty, the awesome God who is not partial. He takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Get this. Love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. He takes the ancient law of hospitality and he ratchets it up just a little bit. Right? Most people would have done hospitality because it benefited them. But the people of God are supposed to do hospitality because they were just like the people who they're helping. He's reminding them of something. He's reminding the ancient Israelites, hey, you were just like those travelers. You were just like those sojourners. You were just like those lost and broken and weary people. And if we were to put it into our world, which I think we have to do, it's not a physical land that we were lost of. It's not a physical place or being. Instead of it's a spiritual place. So we're looking at this and saying, I remember when I was lost. I remember what it was like to be broken and weary and having no hope. I remember what that was like. And so the Lord says, you, Cornerstone, people in Cornerstone, you were just like them. You were exactly like them in every single way. You were the broken. You were the lost. You were the forgotten. You were the needy. You were the ones with no place to lay your head. Until I clothed you, until I fed you, until I gave you a name, my own name. You live only by my hospitality, only by my saving hospitality. And I think that's the vision for hospitality that Christians are supposed to be having. I think it's a vision that says, every time I show hospitality, I'm remembering where I came from, right? I'm remembering the things that I'm supposed to remember about God and who He is. And what's more, I'm not only just remembering God's graciousness to me, I'm also remembering to be gracious to others, which is exactly the way God was gracious to me. And I think that's the beginning of hospitality. So let me break down the text just a little bit. So kind of, some of you guys like to take notes. I didn't put PowerPoints up because I didn't have like really long sentences. Just really, really simple. One is the call. The call, the command in verse 1. And it's just love brothers. Love your brothers, love your sisters, love the family of faith. 2 is to remember the way, just the way. And the way we love our brothers in verses 2 through 5 is pretty extensive. There's like 4 different things. I'm only going to be focusing on one of them, and that's hospitality. And that's in verse 2. So in a sense, I'm kind of preaching a crazy sermon at Cornerstone because this is a bit topical. So be gracious to me. The third thing is the hope. What is the hope that we have? What is the ability to love our brothers well and to practice hospitality well? And the ability is that we have a God who will never leave us nor forsake us. So let's just get into the call. The call of this passage is abundantly clear. Brotherly love must continue. And in order to understand why the command or the call is so crucial here, we need to go back just a couple of chapters. You look at chapter 11 and we have this great hall of heroes of the faith, right? You have so many great stories of people being faithful and people doing what they should in obedience and in faith. And we have all this in 11, and then going into chapter 12, it tells us that we have and are a part of an unshakable faith. We are a part of an immovable family. And then in chapter 13, it says, so love that family. Love that family of faith. Let brotherly love continue. Or as in one translation says, brotherly love must continue. It must. The command is abundantly clear. The call is clear. Love your brothers. Love the family. But then in verses 2 through 5, we get in the how. We get in the how are we actually going to do this? How is it possible to love people that lie, that steal, that cheat, that are awkward? And let's face it, some of us are awkward, right? Some of us are awkward where you kind of have a conversation. We're like, oh, this is awkward. I don't really know what to do. Or imagine going over to someone's house and you're sitting there and you're asking them questions and they're giving you the one-word answers. You're like, it's going to be a long night, right? Or you have someone who's just talking your head off, right? I feel like I'm like that guy. Everyone's like, slow down. Stop talking to me. But we have this awkwardness, right? It doesn't take very hard. If you've ever come to Cornerstone as a new member, right, you're all of a sudden like, wow, there's hundreds of people here that I don't know. That's awkward. That's hard. How do you do it? How do you love them well when awkwardness builds up? How do you love people who are annoying, who are weird, who are dysfunctional, who have different histories than you have, who have different cultural backgrounds, different ethnic barriers that you have never even encountered? How do you do that? How do you love someone who's selfish? Because we all are hurtful. And this is why I love this passage so much, because this passage kind of puts meat to the bones of the doctrine. Right? It tells us how to do it. Not very many of us, I think, at Cornerstone very often are asking the question of why. Why do I need to love people? Right? Doctrinally, we understand that. We get that. But sometimes we get to the question of how a lot more often than that. Right? We're struggling with how do I actually practice that thing that I know that I should do? And I think the answer is hospitality. How do I love people? Easy answer, hospitality. You show hospitality to them. And if it's true what I said before, that hospitality is gospel work, right? If the Lord is giving us His saving hospitality and we're reminding that of ourselves every single time we're showing hospitality, that's gospel work, especially when we're showing God's graciousness to others. And if that's true, let's get practical and ask the glaring question of the text. Cornerstone, what are you doing to bring strangers into your home? Because that's what it says, right? It's very, very clear. Don't neglect, don't stand in the way of showing hospitality to strangers. Hospitality in the Bible is a sign of spiritual maturity. God says to be hospitable means to care for the widow, care for the orphan, care for the weak, the oppressed, the foreigner, the immigrant. Those that don't look like you, don't like talk like you, they don't walk like you, they don't say the things that you do, they don't get the things that you do, they don't have the same background as you. We need to look after them. We need to care for them. We need to do everything we can to make sure that strangers amongst our midst are taken care of. Strangers' needs are fulfilled. And that we would dream well for them. One of the things I'd love to start seeing, and I see it already, but I'd love to see it in more measure, I'm speaking out of my own heart, right? Out of my own mind, because I see this deficiency in myself. And it's something that Nathan is teaching some of us, to dream well for other people. To see people's needs and anticipate them. To see them not as they are in this moment of time right now, but to see them instead what they're going to be doing, who they're going to be touching, who they're going to be impacting in the long run. And I want you to catch the importance of hospitality. The end of verse 2 tells us, some have entertained angels unawares. And that's a really weird, that's a really weird verse. Because the implications of some of that is kind of strange. But I think at the very least, I'm going to stick to kind of the very least stuff, the stuff we know. At the very least, the writer's pointing us to Genesis 18. And that's where Abraham is hanging out in his tent. And he's one of the founders of the faith. Right? Abraham is hanging out there. And Sarah's probably laughing somewhere in the back. And some people come up, three different strangers. And And Abraham, of course, shows hospitality to them. He loves them. He does things well for them. He entertains them. He's like, hey, how's this? Can I get you anything? Right? Good. Okay. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Abraham, I'm God. And everyone's like, whoa. Right? In the story, you're like, this is God. Holy smokes. This is wild. And then he's like, yeah, look at these two guys. They're going to go smite some people. Stay away from them. They're kind of crazy. And the Lord blesses Abraham. He does really good things for him. And I don't want to get into like some of the implications of the text. The only thing I want to kind of focus on here is what he's saying when he reminds us that angels could be amongst you. And you couldn't, and you might not even know that they're angels, right? I think what he's saying there is God is intimately concerned with how you do hospitality. How often you do it and the way you do it and your heart behind it. Because when we're thinking about angels, we're thinking about messengers of God, right? We're thinking about God's heavenly entourage. And if the Lord is sending them down at all, anywhere on earth, we have to be considering that the places He could be sending them and the places He could be sending them has got to be a place where His gaze is going to set intensely. And so one thing I think that we draw out of this text is the Lord is intimately concerned with how we do hospitality and that we do it well. Every single time we take someone out to coffee, every single time we welcome a stranger. Every single time we see someone in Cornerstone and say, I don't know them, I should go up and talk to them. Every single time we open up the doors of our home to people, the Lord is taking something that is common, something that we do, which is hospitality. Everyone does hospitality. It's common. He's taking something that is common and normal and regular and taking it into and making it a spiritual experience that He's going to move powerfully through. John Piper calls this being a conduit of God's grace. So if you could think of like God as this like energy source, in a sense, I don't want to get too crazy, but he's sending His energy of grace inside us, and we are conduits, and then all of a sudden we're focusing that and sending it out in other perfect examples of God's grace and His kindness. And I think that's a beautiful thing. We have the ability to be the hands and feet of God to strangers, to be gracious to them. And in some way, some of these strangers, this is going to be the very first example and experience of God's grace that they've ever even known. There's a lot of power in the ability to be hospitable. But let me add a new level to this. If we're talking about brotherly love, why just talk about strangers? Whatever we should do for strangers, we should be doing even more so for the brothers and for the sisters. I look around this room and I see a lot of people who don't know each other. I see a lot of people who want to know each other, and I see a lot of people who are dying to be known. I've spent time at many of your houses, and a lot of the things that I hear is, man, I just wish I knew this person at Cornerstone. Right? I've seen this person, I don't really know them, I'd like to get to know them better. And then I run into people, especially college students, who say, man, I just wish that I could get plugged in there. Right? I feel like every single time I've been going for 3 months, and I just don't know anyone there. And so, from my perspective, I'm seeing this thing where it says, I really, really, really want to know people. I'm really, really, really dying to be known. And so I want you guys to have freedom and to say, there's so many people here that you can connect with. So many people here who need you. And we talk down here up front, every single time we have a new member, we say, hey, new members, we all need each other. And the only thing I want to push you guys to is to start dreaming of some of these new members, dreaming some of these college students, dreaming some of these families who are kind of new and trying to figure out what's going on. Because I think what happens a lot of times is we, who have been here a while, have a great love for each other already. Deep love. And so all of a sudden we come into, this is my perspective, might not be your perspective, but we come into church and I'm so busy throughout the week, I haven't seen you guys in like a week. So the second service gets over, I'm like, I got to go see my friends. I got to go see them. Man, what's Mike Lee doing? Man, I got to go say hey to Tim O'Day. Wait, where's Lee? I got to go do this. And all of a sudden, we forget that there's people here that we need to show grace to. We need to show kindness to. And it's not an intent. We're not trying to do this. It just happens. And so what I want to start changing some of the perspectives that we have to be saying, we have many new people here, many strangers to many of us. So go love well. Invite people into your home. I don't think this might be a little crazy. I would love it if there was not a single newcomer here who never would experience a day where they didn't get invited over to something, right? Over to lunch, over to dinner, over to someone's house. And instead, they felt almost immediately that they were connected inside a community that they'd never experienced before. Because that's been my experience here at Cornerstone. And I'd love it if that was everyone's. Imagine the impact you can have on someone if you dream well for them. you think through an issue that they're having, just go up to them and say, hey, I noticed this kind of in your life, or you mentioned this thing in prayer. Let's go get coffee sometime, and we're just going to brainstorm about it for 2 hours. Or you think of it like this. You think, man, this person and this person would really go well together. And I'm not talking about how a lot of us put that together, right? I'm not saying guy and girl together. I'm saying, like, this guy has these skills to ministry. This guy has these skills to ministry. Let's put them together and point them to a ministry here in service, right? Or here in the church, or here outside of the church. Because if we start getting the vision of kind of networking and connecting through hospitality, I think we're just going to take off even more so than we've already done. Hospitality is a heart of changing your facial expressions, your body language, the way you talk to people, the way you smile, to make other people feel taken care of. It begins with that kind of superficial level. It's a decision to go after the awkward, the hard to deal with, the strange, the poor, the less desirable, the ones who can't possibly repay you, and you treat them as their worth in Christ, kings and queens, when you're around them. We're fighting some things in hospitality. And two things I think I'm fighting, or I've kind of seen us fight as well, is busyness and a Martha Stewart-like hospitality. And so let's kind of talk about the Martha Stewart kind. The Martha Stewart one is the second you walk into someone's house, you feel like you're on eggshells, right? Because they have everything so pristine, everything so perfect. It's a gourmet meal. Everyone's smiling. All the kids are happy. Everything's going perfectly. And you think, man, if I show them who I really am, they're going to think I'm crazy, right? And all of a sudden, you can't say anything. You can't walk anywhere. You feel like you have more dirt underneath your fingernails than an entire house altogether. And I kind of joke, I kind of kid about that, but this is the reverse of Martha Stewart-like hospitality. It's, I can't have people over to my house because I have dishes in the sink and I don't want them to see it. I can't have people over to my house because it's a little dirty, it's a little chaotic, and if they see that, I think they're going to perceive me as someone who's dirty, right? Or who's like messed up or doesn't have it all together. And I don't want them to see that. And so instead what we do is we say, I'm not going to bless someone today because I don't want to be perceived as someone who doesn't have it all together. I don't want to bless someone today because there's dishes in the sink, because there's a spot on the mirror. And I think what we're doing is we're keeping blessings from other people by doing that. And I want to challenge that view by saying that's not the biblical view of hospitality. The biblical view of hospitality that I see in the Bible is they had people in their homes every single day for meal after meal after meal. And I understand we have some difficulties there. Culturally, we have some difficulties there with where we're at. But I think if we have that kind of philosophy, that kind of mentality, that I'm going to be completely vulnerable, I'm going to stop exporting this image and this facade that I have it all together, that my kids are happy, my spouse is happy, that the roommates are happy, that everything's great, everything's clean. And if all of a sudden we start being vulnerable with each other and accountable to each other and authentic with each other, I think our love is going to increase for each other. Because if we don't do that, then we're going to start comparing and start hindering our love for each other. The second thing I want to talk about is busyness. And I'm the worst at this. Even this week, this is ridiculous. Even this week, I would think I'm too busy to be hospitable to these people because I'm writing a sermon on hospitality. Right? And people would come over to my house and I'd be like, oh, man, it's about that time. You know, look at the time. I got stuff to do. Got to write that sermon. And I was convicted, like, all week. Every single time this happened, I thought, what am I doing? I've got to be hospitable. I've got to be, because my busyness is keeping me from it. If you grew up in the 90s, like I did, and I'm going to say this, and you were like, ah, that's not me at all. I grew up with Adventures in Odyssey. Like this, like I watched that, or I listened to that radio drama, watched the movies and everything, and characters like Eugene and Mr. Whitaker and all that. Okay. It's like MTV for like church nerds, right? And one time there's a story that where they did a rendition of Pilgrim's Progress. And so it's a little bit different than the normal Pilgrim's Progress. This Pilgrim's Progress, you had Christian and he was trying to get to the celestial city. He was on his path trying to do everything he could to get there. And he wanted an audience with the king. He wanted to see the king and to see him in his splendor. And he wanted to say, like, I'll serve you. I pledge allegiance to the king. I don't know. He just wanted to see him. And so he's on his way to go to the celestial city. And there's all kind of pitfalls, all kind of characters, really scary ones even. And there was one character that was not scary at all. And her name was Miss Busybody. And it's a ridiculous radio drama. So Christian went up to Busy Bunny. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm busy. I'm doing all these things. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm going to the celestial city to see the king. She says, oh, the king, what gifts are you bringing him? He's like, gifts? I didn't realize I had to bring any gifts. Like, what are you talking about? And she said, oh, let me show you. And she showed him all these trinkets, all these worthless crafts. Very, very small, not impressive at all. She said, I'm bringing these gifts to the king, and I have to continue to make them and do these things. And if you're like me, right, you grew up kind of with the Reform tradition or whatever, and you're thinking, whoa, 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 lady, that's works-based righteousness. You can't go to the king for that, right? But that's not the point of the story. The point of the story was that Christian all of a sudden began to sit down and make the trinkets with her and begin to be busy. And then all of a sudden he realized after a time, I'm so busy being busy that I'm not getting to the point where I need to do. I've forgotten to keep the main thing. And I think we do this so often, right? We come to church and we're like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this afterwards. And then we bolt out as fast as we can. And we neglect to see who's in our midst. Or we're along the road and we're doing so much stuff, and even good stuff, right? We have this and this and this to do. And then we forget to show compassion to the stranger. And so I want to kind of combat that, because I think we have to repent of that if brotherly love is going to continue. Two of those things is killing hospitality, and it's killing, therefore, our love. So a couple things that I want to say, just ideas just to plant some seeds and to kind of get things going. This might help you with hospitality. You might even be doing these incredibly well. But the first thing is invite people into your homes. Do everything you can to invite people to your homes. Homes are the incubators for hospitality. I spent some time working at a sports camp called Kennecott Camps for 4 summers in college. And then while I was there, the highlight of every single one of those summers was this family called the Thompsons, a big family. You might have met Shane and Nikki. I've brought them here, and they met some of you. They hung out with the Markhams for a day. Incredible family. That was the highlight of my summer, getting to spend time with them, because they invited me over, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, every single day. Every single day, Shane or their kids or someone would just say, hey, come over to the house. They lived right on campus. And so they're like, hey, come on, just come in any kind of time you want to. Doesn't matter what's going on. Open door policy for you. And I was touched by their willingness to invite a scrawny, ill-mannered guy to their house to eat all their food. I mean, I ate there all the time. And it was awesome. They brought me over for meals, for Bible studies, for daily chores, snacks, wrestling matches with their boys, embarrassing conversations about how many times I've struck out with so many girls. And then, this thing right here, I lost to Settlers of Catan against Nikki for a straight summer. I lost every single game for 3 months against her. I call that the Black Summer. When I went over to their house, I was always touched by them. It was as if I was wanted to be over there. Their body language told me, Tim is safe. Tim, this is a good place. It's not defensive. Tim, please come over every single time. Their conversation rolled off their tongues because they truly wanted to know how my day was, how I was doing, what's new in my life, where am I going, what I thought on spiritual issues. They opened up everything from the cupboards to their children's hearts to me. I knew I had freedom there. They went into hospitality with this on their mind, that gospel ministry was going to eat up their time, their money, and their resources. And they spent wildly. And that's what I want for us. Number two, another idea for hospitality is small groups. Here's a shameless plug. If you want to be hospitable to others, get involved with small groups. So many of this body have been richly blessed by small groups. And some of us have probably gone into small groups thinking like, ooh, I don't know how this is going to work. Man, I'm busy. I have this, I have this, I have this to do. And then there's that weird guy and this thing over here going on. I don't really want to do this. And now that we're in small groups, we can't remember what life was like without it. All of a sudden, we're touched. Our hearts are soaring every time we're thinking, man, I got this to do, this to do, this to do. And the priority is small groups. And so I might go a little bit off of school. I might go a little bit off this just so I can make it here on time. Right? And that person, we might have thought, man, this is going to be hard. This is going to be rough ministry. Now all of a sudden we see their hurts. We see their needs. All of a sudden we start praying for them. And then our hearts are totally changed for them. Right now we can't help but dream for them. Now we can't help but want to be around them. And that's because we're visiting them, we're seeing them, we're praying for them. We're seeing them inside their own environments, inside their homes. Homes are the incubators for hospitality. So let's get in there. And here's something, some small groups might not like to do this. But I really think we should start inviting people over into our house, right? Sometimes we have like the certain houses that we continue to go to, the certain one house. I think college students even, this is, some of you guys might, I'm not going over to college students' dorm. Invite them over, right? Invite them over to your dorm. Invite them over to your small house that doesn't have heat or doesn't have air or is too small or too dirty or too... Because the reason for inviting people into your home is not so that we're comfortable, not so that we have space for everyone to sit, but instead so that we can see into your life, so that we can see you in your environment, in your setting, and get to know you. And so the thing I kind of want to push here is more of an authentic, more of a relatability type deal, not this, oh, we don't want to go over there because we don't have time, or, oh, getting the kids over there. I understand sometimes that's hard. I don't have kids. I understand it's hard. But I do just want to say, get the heart behind. Let the heart behind the hospitality shift a little. And the last kind of idea I want to throw out there for you, just for practical ideas, is volunteer. How to be hospitable to our city. I think there's a real push in this text to be hospitable to strangers, not just the brothers, not just the people who show up to church, but rather strangers, people we don't know, people we don't often see. And so I just want to say, go and volunteer at RIFA. Go volunteer at Area Relief Ministries, Birth Choice, the Care Center with Pastor Nathan. These are going to put you into situations that you've never experienced before, or get you around people that you're not normally with. And then all of a sudden, you're being hospitable to them will show people God's grace, right? Because that's the whole purpose of this. Hospitality is gospel ministry. So many of you do this well, right? It's easy to listen to a sermon like this or a message and think, man, I stink at hospitality. I'm so bad. And I don't want to heap up condemnation. That's not what I'm trying to do here. What I'm trying to do is if you're doing this well, I want you to be inspired to do it more. If you're doing it well and you're tired and you're in the trenches and you're thinking, man, how in the world can I do this? How I feel like I've been doing this stuff for people every single night. And I get that you need some time off. You need vacations. You need rests. But I also want to say that we don't have enough time to waste. There's so many lives that we can touch here. So many lives from people that we don't know that we can impact even more. And so I want to stir you guys up to do hospitality more. Be more intimate with people. Be more vulnerable with people. Go to their houses. Spend time with them. Look after their needs. Remember that you're fighting for this church when you do hospitality. You're fighting for our brotherly love. So do it more. I realize that I'm skipping most of verses 2 through 5 when I say that, like, that's a whole point. It's not really a point. All I'm doing is verse 2. But I want you to have a concentrated look at hospitality. And now I want to kind of transition into the hope. What is our hope? What is our ability to be able to do hospitality well and be able to love each other well? If the call is to love the family of faith and we're doing it by hospitality, what happens when we fail miserably at hospitality and love? Left up to us, we would turn hospitality into cliques, compassion into an obligation, and bringing people over into our house is a festival of pride. So, how do we do it? How is it possible to believe that I can divert funds to people I barely know? That I can give up my time and our resources of my family, your children, your spouse, your friends, and do it to people you don't even know? How can you share people's burdens when you have enough burdens as it is? How can you give your money to people that you think, I don't really even know if this is going to turn out as well as I'd like it to? Although it's paired with verse 5, which specifically talks about greed, I think the phrase there, in the end of verses 5 into 6, can go for every single one of the four, like, how-tos in verses 2 through 5. And honestly, any command of the Bible. So I think it's safe to kind of use this one, just saying that. This is the phrase. For he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? And these words are the power behind our ability to give up everything we have for others. Because Jesus will never, ever, ever forsake you. Why should you not fear to give up your money? Because Jesus will never, ever, ever forsake you. Why should you fear to give up your time and your resources? Because Jesus will never, ever, ever forsake you. Why should you not fear to bring strangers and people you barely know into your own house? Because Jesus will never, ever, ever forsake you. And there's power in those words. It should give steel to our veins and courage to our hearts to remember that we have a God who will never leave us no matter what we've done. And the reason He'll never leave us is because He paid it all. He did everything required for us. This is Lee preached this morning. Look at verses 11 through 12 of this very chapter. You see, Jesus was given the very reverse of hospitality. It says this with kind of confusing language in there, if you're new to the book of Hebrews. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the holy places by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin are burned outside of the camp. So Jesus also suffered outside of the gate in order to sanctify His people through His blood. And what this verse is talking about is the cross. Hospitality is bringing a stranger in from the dangers outside of the walls, into a place where there's warmth, where there's peace, where there's comfort. In. Yet Jesus was thrown outside of the gates. Something filthy to be discarded, something cast away, something disfigured. He was sent. He was once inside and then thrown out, beaten, mocked, spit on, killed. He started His life here with no room in the inn. He lived His life with no place to lay His head. And He ended His life outside of the city gates, broken and weary, with no one to call friend. And what's more, what's powerfully more than that, is that He cried out, my God, why have You forsaken Me? He was given, and as Lee said today, He drunk down the dregs of God's inhospitality. Right? The reverse of what we're trying to figure out in this text, God was given, in, Jesus was given in every single facet, in every single way. By doing so, He bought us from the hands of death and triumphed over the grave. He took the sojourners who were once in an enemy land, all of us, and He washed our feet. And He taught us how to wash others' feet. He took the outsiders and brought us inside. He took those who had no name and no purpose, and He gave us a name above any other name and any other purpose that we could ever even dream of. This is our hope in living a life of love towards others. We go outside of the gates like Him, and we pour out our lives. We pour them out like offerings. We can walk in confidence that He who loves us will never, ever, ever forsake us. He is our helper. Go now in brotherly love and care well for the stranger. Have compassion for those in distress. Invite others freely and richly into your homes, and fear not, because we have a God who will never, ever leave us or forsake us. Bow with me. Lord, we need Your grace to do this. We need Your grace to apply. Even I, throughout this week, have been failing miserably at this, I think. So we need Your grace. We need mercy. I pray that You would stir up our hearts to dream for people. Stir up our hearts for dreaming where Cornerstone can be by Your grace and by loving each other even more richly. I pray that You would put us outside of our comfort zones, outside of the areas where we find even greatest strength at times, which is in the company of friends, and cause us to go out even more and welcome strangers into our homes, so that our love would flourish with each other. I pray these things for Your glory and by Your will. And I pray these things so that Your name would be getting more and more fame. Amen. You're dismissed.